Guys of a Certain Age is brought to you by no one. Absolutely no one. Except these dudes walking down memory lane. Now let's head to the studio to see what they misremember next.
It's a podcast that's so popular it should have a publishing clearinghouse subscription. It's Guys of a Certain Age. Robbie Koblentz in studio alongside
Ed McMahon.
No. Ed McMahon did not do
publishing. That's right. We always think that, right?
That's
that
right.
That was like one of those urban myths or whatever.
No, he did the competitors.
Yeah, we both. But that's what everybody thinks.
Yeah,
that's this true. Is Art Shirley, by the way, mistaken.
and Jay Reed.
So last week in the This Is Robbie's Life, I should have mentioned that I've worked for Publishers Clearinghouse.
Really?
I've done 3 prize patrols in the state of Mississippi.
That's hilarious.
So, and the guy who. It's kind of the face of it. His name's Dave. I can't remember. Really, really nice guy. And we did a prize patrol in Jackson and like around Hattiesburg and then Tupelo. So
you're part of like the team that shows up with the ginormous check?
Or so
how does that work?
This could be my geek of the week because I don't have one. So the way it works is somebody from Publishers Clearinghouse flies in. They go and they get roses and balloons from a local florist. They have the check printed up. Whoa. The big old check printed up, which I have a copy of a big old check printed up like at a local Kinko's or something. And they pick up some champagne from a liquor store. And then they rendezvous with the video crew because we're always shooting prize patrols. And then we Dave, who I've worked with, jumps in our van and we go to the winner's house and then we walk up with camera rolling, mic going, the whole 9 yards. Hey, Publishers Clearinghouse here, you won money. And so you film the whole thing where, and they have no clue. And so you don't know. No, no.
Wow.
One of them, we went to their house. They were not there. We went to the neighbors and asked. They were at work, so we went to their work. The other one, they weren't there. They were actually on a vacation, like in Alaska.
Wow.
And so we gave the check to their pastor, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's going to be hard to.
Yeah.
Good luck getting that back.
Then the other one, we walked up, and they were there. But they have no clue. So you walk up, you shoot it, and then you do a little stand-up at the end, you know, another satisfied winner from Publishers Clearinghouse, yada, yada, yada. But the guy, Dave, said, you know, one time for a commercial campaign they did, was he debated Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny about who was really real, and he was the only one who was really real. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Like the M&M's commercial.
Yeah, yeah. And they pivoted to a model where you're playing games online and doing things online, and then you win from you know, spending time online with their games. So it's actually real. I've seen 3 people get checks.
Okay.
Well, 2 people and then, well, 3 people, but anyway, so I have a t-shirt that says I'm part of the Publisher Clearinghouse Prize Patrol. So, you know, it's kind of fun.
That is fun.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
You would have loved it, Jay. You would have loved it. But they kind of parachute in and get all this stuff, and then they fly back out. So that's my geek.
And they still do it, right?
Yeah. We did one last August, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, up around Tupelo. So.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, so, that recently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know they were even still doing that kind of thing.
As a young man. As a child.
No. I've done like 3 of them in the last 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
So, but anyway. So, Publishers Clearinghouse Prize Patrol. That is my geek of the week.
That's awesome.
His geek of the week. Yeah. Yeah. So, you guys can't.
I know. It's all out of order.
That's what I had. That's what I had as being Publishers Clearinghouse.
Did you?
Yeah.
No. You had Ed McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed McMahon is a winner, but not the giver of money.
No, he's not.
I wish I could remember which one he did. I don't even remember which.
Is Beer's Digest? Something?
No, it was. Here, I'll find it.
Budweiser?
You are correct, sir.
All right, while you're looking for that, I'm going to do
the
my
Mandela
geek.
Effect. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Superman, which is no longer Superman Legacy. It's now just Superman.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I was unaware.
Yeah, well, it just happened, I think, last week. Anyway, as that movie continues to develop, they've cast their Perry White, and it's Wendell Pierce, who's on The Wire, but I know him more from Jack Ryan. Did you watch The Wire?
I've only seen a little bit of The Wire. I mean, no, go ahead.
I always think that's a show I should watch.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched it
yet. Yeah. But Jack Ryan, he played Admiral Greer.
Yeah,
Admiral
Greer. Oh, okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Good.
But he's also in Suits.
Yes, that's okay. I knew there was something I knew him from that was other than The Wire.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of stuff. You'd recognize his face if you're not familiar with him. But Wendell Pierce is going to be the Perry White. I think that's going to be a great choice. I think he's going to be really good.
Yeah, I agree.
The whole cast is looking real solid.
American Family Publishers. That's
I knew it was American something.
Okay, gotcha. Nicholas Hoult, we mentioned. I think that was probably one of the most recent ones. Is going to be the Lex Luthor. I think he'll be good. He says he's really only familiar with the character from Smallville. But Michael Rosenbaum.
Why don't you get Micah Rosenbaum then?
Yeah, he said he's the best Lex Luthor ever. But
the whole, what else did he do? He did some other superhero stuff, right?
Nicholas Hoult?
Yeah.
Yeah, he played the Beast in...
Right.
Yeah.
And he also played J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes, he sure did.
Mm. Or C.S. Lewis.
No, he played Tolkien. Yeah. And
in the biopic.
Yeah. And then he played a zombie in Warm Bodies.
Okay. Mm,
yeah.
Would not have seen that.
So I'm going to show a picture to you guys. So this is a Publisher's Clearinghouse. You guys in the studio. That's Dave, who I've done it with a couple of times. Okay. Going on prize patrols.
Okay.
Awesome. So, yeah. All right. It's no longer about me. It's about it's about art.
It really is it? Is it? I think I'm done.
Okay. Yeah.
By the way, that was Wendell Pierce being cast as Perry White, in case you missed that two or three seconds to get my gig in.
I think he'll be great as Perry White. Yeah. I mean, he brings a gravitas to it, you know.
And that orneriness.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is really shaping up to be a young Superman in a world of superheroes.
I'm still not sold on the using the Kingdom Come logo, but or Superman emblem. But
did you see where somebody begged Gunn to use Grant Gustin in something? Who was the Arrowverse Flash? And Gunn said, "Hey, I would love to. You know, he's great. We would love to work together with him." So
maybe that's a possibility.
You know, I would love to see Gustin come in as the Flash or as a Barry Allen. You know, kind of take the Wesley Shipp becoming. You know, not Barry Allen, but
who's Golden West? Wally West?
No, not Wally West. That's Kid Flash.
Oh, okay.
Who
became Flash after the crisis stuff?
Yeah, but who was the who's the Golden Age Flash?
Oh, Jay Allen.
Jay Garrick. Yeah, Jay Garrick. Right. Yeah.
Who's Jay Allen?
That's not Jay Allen. That's Jay Reed.
Jay Reed Garrick. Yeah.
A superhero in my own right.
Yeah, in your own right.
Regrettable.
But
yeah. So do that. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
So, but anyway. All right.
Why don't we do the casting? We keep trying. So my geek.
Nobody listens to us, including our wives.
Right. Well, the one person that does listen to us shared this geek with me. Of all people, it's kind of ironic. She sent me this news article and said, "I'm sure you've all heard of this." And actually, we really hadn't. So I went before we taped today or recorded or whatever we do to McDonald's, my local McDonald's.
Yes.
And got a McDonald's Coke and some nuggets. And
what
some
is this McDonald's
savory
you speak
sauce? McDonald's is the McDonald's of anime.
Ah.
So apparently, in a lot of anime, movies and series, instead of McDonald's, they have McDonald's. And it looks exactly like the normal logo, except it's flipped. So the M is flipped to like a W, and then it's McDonald's.
The Golden Archers are upside down.
Archers are upside down, and I guess McDonald's has embraced it rather than
fought against it.
Uh-huh. And so now they've got a promo as we speak, and it goes on, I think, a few more weeks, so it may still be going on when this airs. But there's really not a whole lot going on in the store. Like, they have the sauce, which is a savory ginger soy kind of sauce. It's got a little kick to it. I brought some in for us to share. And it's got the cup, and then the bags have like a anime
comic strip. It's a
comic strip,
manga. If it's the comic strip, but
okay.
Yeah,
and a code, and you can take this code, and we watched one little 30-minute short before we aired. So if you got the code, you can go to the McDonald's.com website and see these little manga drawings in the shorts, little 30-second anime shorts, and so it's just. you know.
Yeah, we saw, we got McDonald's a few weeks ago and got the bag and said, what is this? And then I just never looked into it.
Yeah, well, Jacob, my son, he's into anime, and he didn't know anything. He had just heard of it, but not anything about it. So,
Have you read the bag yet?
I have not read the bag yet. I literally just got it.
I did not even bother to read the bag.
But there's Meet the Characters, and so it's, they've got some, like, there's something that kind of looks like Mayor McCheese called Berg. Mm-hmm. There is almost a Transformers character named Wackdizer 3000. I guess they're releasing these as they go because there's a lot of them that say coming soon.
Are they in Happy Meals?
Well, I asked her if I could get a Happy Meals, and she didn't act like there was a Happy Meal available. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Mayor William. Mayor. Okay, so that's different. Court Senior instead of Quarter Pound. Isn't there a Quarter Pound Junior or something? This is Court Senior. Anyway, there's some sort of related characters. Some of them look like they work in a McDonald's. Some of them are just look like anime type characters in general. But, you know, it's an interesting little tie-in.
Yeah, that is.
For somebody especially, I mean, I've been watching.
Probably more successful with the kids than the Pulp Fiction tie-in was. Probably so.
Probably so. Yeah, I've been watching some anime lately, and it's my first show to actually watch. So I'm kind of new to this, but.
What is it? What are you watching?
I'm watching.
My Hero Academia.
What?
No, okay. Guess not.
Pluto?
It's actually
Attack on Titan.
Has something to do with food?
It has to do with food. Jacob told me about it. He said, I think you might be interested in this because the story is they go into Delicious in Dungeon is the name of it.
Okay.
Not to be confused with Dungeons and Dragons.
It's like this group, this team of people who are in this subterranean world, and they're trying to rescue this guy's sister who is eaten by a dragon, but the dragon takes a whole month to digest his food, so they have a month to get to her before she's digested. In the meantime, they meet up with this guy who likes to eat the monsters. They don't have any money, and there's a whole backstory behind that, so they're trying to eat and hunt along the way, and so they kill these monsters, and they got this guy who has a book who tells you how to cook and eat the monster. So about half the show is like Food Network anime. But there's an element of adventure and, you know, reaching a quest as well. So I'm only about two or three episodes in, but I'll, you know, stay tuned.
What streaming platform is it on?
It was on Netflix, I believe.
Okay. That makes sense.
So speaking of food coming soon, maybe to you or you or you or whoever, IHOP and Applebee's are opening joint stores.
Really?
Yeah, they've done well.
Applehop or iHappleby's?
That's what I was exactly. Yeah. They've done really well in international markets.
They're doing really well in Denmark
and Belgium. So anyway, but we've gone through our geeks. It's time for our
Jay's Regrettable segment. Today brought to you by McDonald's. With friends like these, who needs anime?
Or edamames.
Edamame.
Anime, edamame.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Right, this week, I think, is definitely up from the last week. All right,
I missed the last week.
Last week was The Eye, and it was very
disappointing. That was horrible. The Eyes didn't have it.
This week, it's the Miss.
I did sound like Ed McMahon right there. No.
Oh, you're so you're so correct, great one.
So this week, it is the Mystery Woman of the Jungle, Fantoma.
Oh, Fantoma.
Fantoma. Are you familiar with Fantoma?
I have no idea.
Fantoma was She's a mystery to be. Barclay Flagg, who was a pseudonym for Fletcher Hanks. Fletcher Hanks is a comic dude who was in and out, like, did a lot of stuff in 3 years and then kind of disappeared.
Okay.
A lot of his characters were, had a, basically they are described as near omnipotent and just imposing horrible judgment on crime perpetrators. This woman, she's, her goal is, and this is again back in 1940 jungle comics, blonde haired blue eyed woman who lives in the jungle, takes care of, quote, the jungle born. But when she's angry, her skin turns blue and her head turns into a skull.
Wow.
Yeah. Still so got blonde hair. Still got blonde hair.
So kind of like Sheena meets Hulk, I guess.
Something.
Sheena Hulk. Yeah. It's kind of like IHOP and Applebee's.
And she was kind of the intro. She was appeared about a year before Wonder Woman, so she was pre-Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman!
And she's actually in this book that we're looking at. She's got a 4-page spread instead of a 2-page, so I guess she's better remembered than most.
Yeah.
But she kind of had this, like, it was kind of funny on one of the comic pages that they put. It says, you know, it's talking about being in the jungle, but then it says, in the next issue, Fantoma comes to New York. Oh. So it's like the jungle city, I guess. But it was like weird things. She flew, but she flew on her thought waves. She could kind of tell the future. She knew what was coming. And like I said, she banishes a villain to a dinosaur-populated asteroid, transforms a pair of jewel thieves into creatures that are a cross between grasshoppers and dandelion leaves. And then demolishes a squad of military bomber planes with a living sandstorm and a flying formation of jungle lions. So it's pretty outlandish stuff.
Do the illustrations show any of that? Do the pages show any of that?
A little bit. Not really. The only ping, it shows this guy who is trying to find an ancient headdress of a old... which would be kind of like a witch doctor or something. Anyway, he slides down into this crater, and she said, you shall become one of them and eat mud and fire for the rest of your days.
Wow.
She's pretty ruthless. Now, they say when Fletcher Hanks left the comic, they continued it for a little while, and they kind of calmed her down. She became more just of a jungle woman who...
went back to the jungle, right?
Went back to the jungle. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, in thinking about... whether this would last today, I could kind of see a version of this where, and then maybe there already is something where, like you said with Hulk, she, you know, is a beautiful woman normally, and then when she gets, you don't like me when I'm angry, that kind of
maybe
thing.
She becomes more like a gorilla or some type of jungle animal.
Transforms into something when she's doing her superhero stuff. So I can see that maybe working, but this is kind of middle of the road with regrettable and not regrettable.
Oh, I think it may be regrettable.
Regrettable.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's close. There's some.
I'm neutral and y'all are regrettable, so I think we can call it regrettable. I mean,
I'm chaotic.
There's
neutral.
Some fun ideas, but I'm going to have to say regrettable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blonde hair did it.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
I won't tell Melissa.
Yeah, don't tell Melissa.
Oh, okay.
All right. That does it for Jay's regrettable segment. Up next, we're going to talk Dune Part 2. And we're back after Jay writes on the table. It comes across through the mic. I heard that. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Jay with, I mean, one day.
His regrettable writing.
One day we need the tomes of Jay.
The tomes of Jay.
That should be a.
Here's some sounds that he made.
Read my notes. No.
Odd sounds that.
Okay. Yeah. I was saying tomes, not tones.
Tomes.
T-O-M-E-S. Yeah. As in books.
Okay. Gotcha.
You make more notes than anybody I've ever. I mean, that includes people I vaguely remember from college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Where are they all?
Where are all the notes?
Yeah.
Well, I have a file at home, a file for this podcast of all the things that we've.
How big is this file?
It's pretty thick. I mean, relatively speaking. I don't keep everything because I started keeping it in notebooks. And so I don't know.
What'd you have at first? I remember you had the typewriter, which was kind of annoying. No, we're trying to talk here.
I thought he started with an abacus or something.
I think I had another notebook similar size, and it's filed somewhere. I'm not sure actually where the notebook is, but
we should break into his house and steal it and see what he really thinks about us.
I think we could probably find that out without having to do any breaking and entering.
Yeah, it'd be more fun. So anyway,
you've seen a movie that the rest of us haven't seen.
Yeah. So Jay, are you gonna go see Dune 2 at some point?
I would like to. I don't know if I will.
I would like to.
How long it hangs around.
I would like to go again.
So. I'm not upset if you spoil things, if that's what you're asking.
Well, there's nothing to spoil. You've read the book and you saw the David Lynch version. So, great movie. One of the best I've seen in a while. That does it for this.
That's right. Thanks.
Yeah. It was, if you look at Dune Part 1 as kind of the precursor to set everything up, it's pretty much nonstop action from the. From the opening credits all the way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of the things I loved about Dune and the world building is, well, let me back up. So one of the things that Frank Herbert did that was different than other science fiction of the day in the late 60s, early 70s, he made it almost organic in and of. It wasn't a hardcore robots everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was a very grimy, gritty type of feel of science mm-hmm. fiction. So you had
felt it like a lived in and livable world.
Yeah.
Or system of worlds.
Because science fiction until then had been pretty much shiny new future. You look at Heinlein, mm-hmm. you look at Clark, you look at Asimov. There was a lot of chrome, and if they had it at that point, I'm sure spandex. But mm-hmm. The whole backstory with Dune, it takes place in the year 10,000. There's a butlerian jihad against AI machines, which caused a basically almost a 10 commandments of artificial intelligence that you shall not make a machine that mimics human thought. So it takes out the whole idea of robots and droids and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so you're left with a lot of organic feeling type of imagery. So House Atreides, which is on Caladan, which you saw in Dune Part 1, all water world sort of thing. You have House Harkonnen, which is on Giddy Prime, which is very industrial, very mechanized, but there's no robots flying around. In the way space travel happens, you have an organic being, a space guild member, who takes melange, which is the spice that Arrakis produces, and is able to fold space so that you can go from point A to point B. So there's no warp drives, there's no, you've got lasers, but they're not really lasers like from a blaster standpoint. I don't know if you remember this or not, Art, but the major houses in the Empire, one of the reasons they're major houses is they have house atomics. So they have atomic bombs and missiles that they control.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah. And so they're one of the things that ends up in Dune 2 is Paul Atreides finds the location of the House Atreides atomics, which Duke Leto had hidden, which automatically makes him a major power. So very different. And if you recall some of the machines, like the ornithopters in Dune Part 1, they look like dragonflies. Mm-hmm. So they made things that mimicked actual animals almost. So all that to say this, one of the things I loved about Dune Part 1 and Part 2 was just the world building. In Part 1, when the Imperial Satakur come to assassinate House Atreides, they drop down silently and slowly with their anti-grav suits, right? And so it's just a real elegant little touch that feels almost realistic, and you see more of those touches in Part 2.
What about we had some new characters added, I mean characters that hadn't shown up in Part 1.
So you had Austin Butler's Fade Rotha,
right? Yeah.
Which
I know a lot of people were disappointed that character didn't show up in Part 1. They thought, but it really, timing wise that's where it should have been.
Yeah, because I haven't read the book in 10 years, but if Fade Ruatha was sent to clean up Robin's, his brother's mess. So the Duke put his nephew, Beast Raban, played by Dave Bautista, in charge of Arrakis to try to get spice production up. Mm-hmm. Doesn't do it. So he brings in Austin Butler. Thank you. Thank you very much. to take over Arrakis. Okay. And so there, you didn't really need to see him in Part 1. So he kind of follows correctly narratively. Now, one of the things I thought would have been, I would have liked to have seen the Emperor played by Christopher Walken, which I read an article that Denis Villeneuve, or however pronounces his name, was able to talk Walken out of his 4-year hiatus of directing to be the Padishah Emperor in Dune. Walken said it was great. It was 3 weeks of work. That's all he had to do. But you didn't see him in Part 1 at all.
Yeah.
You know, you just see him in Part 2. And they change a couple of things because, a real minor spoiler. In the book, the Emperor fears Duke Leto Atreides, that because he's so popular with the great houses in the Empire, Duke Atreides is, he might take the Emperor's place. In the movie, they basically say the Emperor regarded Duke Leto as a son. And so that was a kind of a big change. So, and anyway, I don't have a big big problem with that.
What character does Florence Pugh play? Because she wasn't in the first one either.
So she's Princess Irulan, who is the princess to the emperor, who, I won't tell Jay that. I mean, you
it's not going to hurt.
She's too young.
Well, yeah. Well, she ends up, Paul Atreides takes her as his bride, banishes the emperor, and becomes the emperor of the known universe.
Okay. At the end. Is the, what's
part two.
Shamel character, Timothy Chalamet.
Which, you know, to me, is probably the weakest casting of all.
I was going to ask you what you thought about the casting.
You know, I thought he did a good job. Art, let me ask you this. I've seen this speculated a few times that Paul Atreides is not the hero, he's the villain.
Hmm.
So I'd never thought.
Because he comes and destroys the world that.
He's
Arachnophobia.
He basically institutes a jihad and releases the Fremen on the universe.
Uh-huh.
And so he is basically Skywalker.
Yeah, he's leading the revolt against the universe. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, so he's an anti-hero, cute Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And so
I've never thought of him that way.
I've never thought of him as a villain, and I've never really thought about him as an anti-hero. I've regarded him as a reluctant savior for the Fremen people.
Yeah, and that kind of needed to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I thought, too. What did you... Okay, so Austin Butler, was he good as...
He was great.
Okay, good.
He was great. Yeah. He...
That was Sting's character in the David Lynch movie.
Sting apparently reached out to Austin Butler and says, I've still got those tights I wore. You know, do you want my tights from the movie?
So, that movie looks very, very dated now.
It looks incredible.
It's still a lot of fun to watch.
It's very campy.
But yeah, in a campy sense of
thing.
Let's see. So Timothy Chalamet was... Okay. Rebecca Ferguson's in it, playing his Paul Atreides' mother, right?
Yeah.
Always like her.
Lady Jessica. Yeah. She was great.
Mm-hmm. And you got Zendaya.
Yeah, Channy was awesome. And they changed her a little bit in that she was very upset. It was very much a new generation of Fremen who didn't believe the Messiah prophecies, which had been planted by the Bene Gesserit. And so Channy, who Zendaya played, was like, these are myths these are not our myths. These are not our prophecies. These off-worlders gave these to us so that they can change us. And then when Paul, who she loved, said, I have got to step into this role as the Lizen al-Gabib, or basically the off-worlder who comes to lead the Fremen to the promised land, she revolts against it, and she's like, I have no part of this. So she ends up leaving at the end of the movie. Ah. So, anyway.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. That's not exactly how I remember it from the book. I think she was a little bit more accepting, but it's not unlike the way they put, who was Aragorn's, Arwen's love, Arwen from Lord of the Rings. They really wrote her part up, for Peter Jackson's version. So the sandworms were amazing.
Special effects were all great.
Effects.
You know, the first movie to me was all the visuals, all the production value, effects, everything was good. It's just the pacing was so slow.
Yeah.
And I do know people that have watched and didn't care for the first part that really liked the second part.
It's one of the best science fiction movies.
But you
movies.
Have to see the first part. I mean, it's not one of those you can go in and say, I'll pick it up from here.
You've read the book. You could probably walk in.
Yeah, but I mean, if you were unfamiliar with Dune, you couldn't just go, I'm just going to watch part two and see what's going on.
No, you've got to know. There's a lot of political subtext.
And how many years ago was part one out?
Three?
Was it three? Two or three? Yeah, maybe three. Yeah. Okay.
Because it was supposed to hit the theaters in 2020. They held it to 2021 because of COVID. And it came out on Max.
That's right. That's right. And I watched it. I think I would need to watch it again, though, before part two. So
You really need to watch the whole thing. You know,
I was going to ask you that. I mean, you watch it at home. But all right, the other guy said, that's Jonah Holland, who's been a guest on our show before.
Honorary guy of a certain age.
That's right. He asked... he said it's really something you need to see on the big screen too.
I would agree with that. Yeah, because the scope is just huge. Yeah. So, I wanted to see more of the Mentats. I wanted to see a spacing guild. I wanted to see a spacer. You know.
You didn't see that?
No.
Okay.
No. So
through that's in Lynch's movie.
Yeah. 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 So Thurfer Howard, who is the House Atreides mentat, uh-huh. he survives and he ends up in the service of Harkonnen.
Okay.
And I would have loved to have seen.
Now, did this finish up the original Dune book? Yeah. Is it the story? Are they going to do anything more? Do they have any plans to revisit the world?
So Villeneuve says he is.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he started writing.
That nugget just came up right there.
That's why nobody else uses that mic.
That's right.
He started writing Dune Messiah. Which,
really? Okay.
Which really, Dune Messiah kind of takes you to the end of this story.
Okay.
So
probably, do you think it'll be a one-part movie, or do you think it's going to be called part three of this, or is it going to be a separate two?
I think they should call it Dune Messiah. Because
and do it in two parts?
Just one part. Okay. Because Dune Messiah is so much slimmer than
Dune. Yeah, but that's why they could have a trilogy that kind of wraps up the... Yeah. I think that's probably...
And if it goes well, then you go to Children of Dune.
Yeah.
You know, but Dune Messiah is pretty... There's some things that happen in it. I mean, the whole idea of the Golas. Do you remember the Golas? Mm. So basically, there is a guild that can take a dead body and resurrect it.
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
I do remember that. Yeah, yeah, so I do remember that.
I'm not going to say who they resurrect, but they give... Paul Atreides a gola of someone he's very, very familiar with, and it kind of messes with his mind a little bit. And
remember that.
So just kind of, it gets a little more weird.
Yeah.
And there's a Bene Gesserit series in development for Max as well that's going to take place
before that.
So, because the whole thing, I mean, it's the Bene Gesserit who are trying to create the perfect being, the Kwisatz Haderach, and so it was supposed to be they've manipulated bloodlines for thousands of years, and it was going to be an Atreides daughter marrying a Harkonnen son to make the perfect child.
Oh yeah,
I heard. I think Elton John's doing the soundtrack for that. Bene and the Gesserits.
Oh my!
And on that somewhat sour note.
Yeah. Oh man, I threw up.
I'm just trying to contribute where I can. I don't have much else to say.
Well,
about Dune.
I would like to go see Dune again. So we'll have to work out a time when you can go.
Maybe
so,
you want as a point of discount night.
Yeah.
And I may go too. I mean,
I think you would enjoy it. So it's a beautiful movie.
Maybe a nice payoff.
Yeah.
Into the first part. Sounds like.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. And the way it, to me, it's so much more faithful than the Lynch version.
Yeah.
You know, the Lynch version, Arrakis gets rain at the end, and that doesn't happen to like four books down the line, you know? So, Javier Bardem, did I pronounce his name right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who plays Stilgar. He is phenomenal.
I'd forgotten he was even in it.
Yeah. He is absolutely phenomenal in it. And he's a little funny.
And Jason Momoa was in it, right?
He was in the first one.
He was in the first one.
Yeah, I know he's not in this one. Well, yeah, if anybody said the first one, you know he's not in this one, right?
Anyway, so
spoiler alert.
Yeah, no, not necessarily, but yeah, you know,
I did just watch the new Aquaman, though. Speaking of Jason Momoa, I enjoyed it.
Okay,
have I told that already?
No,
you said. I think we talked about it being out. So is it out for free, or do you have to pay?
No, it's on Max now.
On Max, okay. Awesome.
Yeah, that's the only way I was going to watch it. But it was, like I said, it was fun. You know, it's probably time to move on to something else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And cool. DC has.
And, so.
Anyway.
But yeah, so okay, good. I'm glad you liked it, though.
Yeah,
it
was, and Art's going to hate it after I give it such a glowing review. This is garbage. I'm never going to do another podcast with that guy again. So, but then you'll forget whether you liked it or not. It doesn't really matter.
I probably forgot if I saw it.
Yeah. All right, well, that does it for us this week. We'll see you next time around.